We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And we are back. It's Dads on the Air. Today being the 23rd of February.
Indeed.
2010. And it's a bright sunny day, although I think it's going to be getting a bit more cloudy later on. Anyway, it's Bill Cable in the studio from Mediate Now, and with me is Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. A joy to be here and a joy to be back. And it is a beautiful day in the sunny, lovely city of Sydney this morning.
So in today's show, we're going to have an interview between our own Rocking Peter Vandervoord and Andrew King from Men's Line, and we'll also be speaking to Dr. Ned Holstein, who's the founder and chair of the board Fathers and Families. And it'd be interesting talking to Ned about the campaign in America to properly recognise parental alienation, which is something we see a lot of in Australia but doesn't seem to be recognised.
Yes, we'll be interviewing Ned live from the United States. We'll be crossing to the States for that interview, so stay tuned for that one.
Okay, we might start with a musical break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Fingers through his hair. Welcome back to Dad's On The Air. We're here at the National Men's Health Gathering in Newcastle, and with us is Andrew King, and he's the Men's Services Manager for Men's Line Australia, which is the national telephone counselling service for men and family relationships. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Good to be here with you, Greg.
We've had your predecessor for many years ago, Terry Melvin, has been on the show a few years back, and it's been a little while since we've talked to someone about Men's Line. I'm sure you've been undergoing lots of changes since he was, you know, running the ship way back then. And do you want to just start off by telling the listeners about Men's Line and what you guys do and what services you can provide for men?
Well, Men's Line Australia is a unique service. There's few services like it in any other country around the world. In 2002, the federal government funded Men's Line Australia to be the national phone line for men and family relationships. So it is the cost of a local call. Men and also some women, 10% of calls are women who are concerned for men within their lives. They could be their brothers, they could be their partners, they could be their uncles. But 90% of the calls are from men. There's roughly about 70,000 calls a year.
Wow.
And basically, since 2002, that service has been a wonderful opportunity for men to access immediate support with a professional counsellor to have a look at what's going on and where's the best place to go. And I suppose that's often the things which guys are not prepared for in how they deal with challenges, is that, there's not a lot of directories out there which are male-friendly, which allow men to find out what's the code in trying to decipher who's the best person to talk to for that, for what problem they're experiencing. So at Men's Line Australia, it's a really easy, user-friendly way where men can actually look at what's happening and also be, you know, referred on to local services that are going to continue to help assist them.
And do you are you able to answer all the calls that come in, or do you obviously 70,000 calls a year? That's a big workload. Do you aim to sort of be there to answer the phone for every guy in crisis 24/7? You know, whenever this crisis happens, is that your aim to be?
Well, that's our job, and we at Men's Line Australia take that seriously, because often when guys access services, it is a significant time and there's significant issues. So what does that actually mean? Well, about 78 to 80% of those calls are answered per year. So that answer rate is in the business of telephone support and counselling, that's actually quite a good performance rate. You know, that's getting among some of the best answer rates. But it can vary. We probably, since we have actually been operating, Monday and Tuesday are the peak call days often. You know, even though it's a 24/7 counselling service, and in a sense we try to use call patterns to know when you actually put the bulk of the counsellors on, that Monday and Tuesday are key days. And I suppose for your listeners that's no surprise, because probably still it's around 70%, you know, 60 to 70% of callers are often around looking at relationship orientated issues and family separation and contact with children. And that Monday and Tuesday often are dealing with mopping up the aftermath of what happened with contact over the weekend. And so it's often that distress of what occurred or didn't occur in that contact, which guys need to be able to just make sense of. Because I suppose a lot of, what is common in working with men is a lot of men use the phrase, "I'd never just talk to my mates down at the pub, you know, about these issues," because it doesn't always feel safe, it doesn't feel appropriate, and also sometimes their mates may be too close to it as well, that it's hard to actually to get that independent look at what's happening and where they need to go.
Can you tell us perhaps what would be some of the main reasons for a man to call you for assistance?
Certainly, well, relationship issues are around that 70%. Certainly, children and child-focused issues are probably a significant proportion of that, and separation issues with partners.
And what type of help would they be seeking?
In that context, often it's in the early days. One of the things which has been happening more and more is that we've broken down that myth that men are slow to access help. You know, I'd imagine 10 years ago, and it's actually, you know, being 2009, 2002 is not that long ago. You know, it's only just out of a 7-year warranty period that happens for, you know, for many products that you purchase today, that is a relatively short history. But in that time, we're seeing that men actually are more likely to act early. So they're actually ringing in the first few days of separation, if not the same day, and just overwhelmed at, one, what does that separation mean and what do they need to do, as well as what's the best way which they can, what they need to actually look at in the future. And a lot of that is around ensuring contact with children is managed best well. So a lot of it, probably around 15-20% of calls are around parenting issues. There's a growing number of calls at it's around 10% now is around men's mental health and depression. One of the things which your listeners may not know, and not many people know about Men's Line Australia, is that we also operate the Beyond Blue phone line. So in a sense, there's a lot of cross support in that all the counsellors are very much well-trained and skilled in mental health issues, depression, and supporting the wide range of issues that affect men's lives today.
Would they ring up and say, look, I've got a mental health problem, can you help me? Or... do you decide that they have? How would it typically be? Because men are generally reluctant to sort of, or probably don't even realise they have a mental health problem.
Or may not be able to put into words
exactly
what they're experiencing.
I would imagine for a lot of guys, they ring up and just say, I'm confused and I don't know what to do. Right. And they feel overwhelmed by their immediate situation. So a lot of counsellors, they use what we call a solution-focused approach, in that we look at what is it that's actually happening currently and what is it that they would like to happen, and what's the things that are going to get in the way from moving from A to B, and that sits really well. All of many of the services across Australia, and there's now 252 federal funded programs across Australia that support men in different communities. That context is a is an important one where they all tend to use that same focus, because men like active ways of having a look at what is it that's actually happened, what stopped happening in their lives. Because often a lot of men access stuff when something has stopped working or something is no longer possible that's important to them, something which they often take for granted even. And it's at that point where guys actually say, I want to do something about this.
So your counsellors or the people answering the phone, they will pass them on to qualified mental health professionals?
That's certainly one of the options. Certainly using, the referrals to, going to see your doctor for depression is a key one, because it gives you access to the free of charge Medicare funded support, which can come from psychologists in different contexts. Men's Line Australia on its website has a great database of different services around Australia, and that's one of the key things as an organisation we need to keep up to date with, is where is it that's that range of programs that are best suitable for men in the broadest range of communities, both in remote as well as the urban and regional context.
And what would you say to the dad that rings up and says, look, I'm not getting access to my children? What do you advise?
It's often maybe a legal issue rather than...
Yes. Do you advise anything in that case?
probably counselling is wary of providing advice. Mm. In a sense, you know, that is, in a sense, a lot of, and I suppose for a lot of guys, they get a bit frustrated sometimes with counselling because it doesn't always give them that immediate, well, what do I do? And I suppose there's a directness which often comes, and that's why Men's Line Australia is very unique, because I think that there needs to be a directness where the counsellor can really talk about what is it that's directly happening, you know, what is it that they see as the important issues and where the guy can go. But at the end of the day, everyone, and I think that's really important in most men's lives, men need to own what they've got to do next. And it's something which is a fine line. So classically, we don't provide legal advice because our counsellors are not lawyers. Mm. But certainly there are, you know, a variety of different avenues, and which are, well, one of them is family relationships online, where there can be some legal exploration of issues can be sought from another phone line. So it's trying to find the best fit for what is going to be for that immediate situation, and what is it that, you know, which, you know, is going to allow that man to move on. Probably for some men, they're really not able to access services which are in their local area, and they may be very stuck and isolated. Men's Line Australia, since 2002, has started a callback service where they actually get called back for a series of weeks, often up to seven sessions or 7 weeks, that the guy who calls decides when the counsellor, and it's the same counsellor, calls back. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, it's a way of working more intensely, because I suppose at the end of the day, if something is going to really help, it needs to have that bit more time, consideration, and it can be tested as the men actually can try something of it in practice and see, did that actually help? Was that any use? And then also talk with the counsellor. So that callback service is particularly available for men who are isolated or cannot get into services which are really needed at that point in time, because some services do have waiting lists.
And what about domestic violence? You get guys sort of ringing up and saying, how do they approach that? Do they say, I've just bashed my wife up, or I've got a problem, or do they ask you advice How do they do that? What happens?
Well, again, it's a whole range of situations. Again, it's going to have so many different approaches. And some guys automatically call because of the actions that they've taken, and they're wanting to try to find out, I've got to do something different, and what can they suggest? Mm-hmm. And one of the... Certainly, you know, there are some men who have experienced violence who call as well. So,
there's a blend. What would be your response?
Well, and one of our, again, each of the states around New South Wales have a range of resources, and probably that New South Wales, we're still developing ours. You know, some of the other states actually are a lot more on the front foot in providing a range of services for men directly. Probably one of the things which in the interim period which Men's Line Australia has set up is that callback service has recently started to run an anger management. So this is anger management, not, you know, specifically domestic violence.
It could be in the workplace. Or
it's an an anger management group, which is on the phone. So you get six guys anywhere around Australia. Yep, all on the phone at the same time. Two counsellors who are also on the phone. And this type of support group over the phone has been very effective in so many different contexts, because the men can be anywhere, but as long as they have telephone access and it's just the cost of a local call, that basically it's a group for 1 hour a week for 6 weeks. So there's a range of options. So for us, that is an experimentation for some of that, where guys cannot get into those services immediately.
Or they're in a region where maybe they're not available, right? Yeah. That might be a rural area or something where there's just nothing.
And I suppose my job as the men's services manager is that I continually are trying to talk with organisations on the ground of how do we improve practice. Yeah. And so in trying to make service delivery that really is relevant to men's lives and helps men to deal with the issues that are most important to them. So certainly that issue of domestic violence is a current and important one, which is regularly discussed. And certainly some organisations are experimenting with other versions of programs, which even 12-week programs, which are being provided in metropolitan Sydney, which men may get access to. So it's a period of great change in terms of that, in trying to take seriously men's interests, because, you know, the majority of men actively want to do something which actually helps to strengthen and support those key relationships, and also to stop the future impact which it has on their children, which in domestic violence is significant. Yes.
And what about, say, a guy rings up and says, look, I'm being abused.
And it may not be physically, but
no, psychological,
any sort of, you know, emotional sort of stuff. There's been a bit of a lack of services, I guess, for you to refer abused men to, because, you know, rightfully most of the services have been provided for female victims. We now know there are some men who may experience that. What do you do if there's a sort of dead end in terms of...
Yeah, what would you say to them? How would you respond to them, for instance?
I'd imagine it's any context of victimisation.
It could be in the family, not just the partner.
Yeah,
but it could be,
exactly.
You know, brother or father.
It will, could be. So you're right in what you say in New South Wales, that for a lot of services on the ground, there are not a lot of programs which you can refer men to in that context at the moment. There's probably slow work where there's little bits and pieces emerging, and I suppose that the big fear, you know, amongst many of our services is that if they directly provide services, you know, to men who have experienced abuse, then it takes away, you know, all of what has actually happened where men have used violence against women. Mm. At the end of the day, we really just try to make men the most, you know, to build up their own strength and their own wisdom, and to be able to, and any person who has been a victim of anything, the expression of it, and that it is unacceptable, it is horrible, that something has to change.
That is
a key part of them actually being able to stand up and looking at what choices which they can take. So historically, women have often made, that has been the process which they've gone through. Mm. You know, now, there is a group of men who are actually looking at that as well, because those issues, when they do arise, they are not often taken seriously. They're often minimised. And again, I think for men, often one of the worst experiences is often when men feel really isolated and cut off from the world, and you know, are a victim to their circumstances. Because I think for a lot of men, their overworld view of the world is one which they survive, they move beyond, they do things which actually get them through. And I suppose that's the key shift which we try in any situation to help men to find.
So that sort of building their self-esteem,
their
building
own
their resources,
capacity to be able to respond to their situation in the most appropriate and safe way possible. So, you know, those are common themes, and in many different issues, it may be violence in the workplace. And for a lot
of men, as you
said, is their interest is that it could be for someone else that they know as well, but they don't know how to support that, you know, that guy who is important to them. Because that's where a lot of men do some of their best work, is when they can actually support and help others in the little way they can.
Yes, yes. Mm. You said you have women ringing you up as well. Is there many women ring up?
Oh, 10% of calls are from women. So.
And how do they approach it? Because it is a men's line. Do they sort of say, look, I'm abused by a man, or
probably the calls which the women would make is twofold. You know, one is that they're inquiring about services for men who are in their life, and so it could be a specific situation, and they're trying to find out where their you know, partner, husband, brother, uncle could get help. Mm-hmm. The other one, which is just out of their general concern for those mm-hmm. key relationships in their lives, that they don't really know who they can turn to. Again, you know, it is relatively unique. It's only 10 years, just over 10 years, that we have actually had any services for men and family relationships. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, 10 years... is a small little across the landscape. Mm. It's actually a very short period of time. So I think those women are often ringing out of concern, and that is the key motivation of how. So what they would be encouraged to certainly get, you know, that guy to ring in and access the line directly, because Men's Line Australia would not just ring any guy as a cold call and say, hey, you know, someone has mentioned you need help. Here I am.
Bing, hang up. Straight. I mean, that may be a harder task than, you know, easier said than done, I think, because a lot of, I mean, I've certainly had men in my life that are obviously going through a crisis, and when you talk to them, mate, you should talk to someone. No, you know, they're not going to call someone. Mm-hmm. Do you give tips to that concerned woman to sort of help them? Because a lot of guys, they're just not going to call you, even though mm-hmm. they may need your service, and even though once they call, they would probably get a lot of good out of it. Are there any sort of tips for you know, it's like getting sometimes getting blood out of a stone, you know?
Well, even the language which you use gives away what the tip is. When you say to a guy, you've got to, it would be good to talk to someone. For a lot of guys, again, it's part of that worldview and life experience growing up. You have a healthy suspicion. And I think a healthy suspicion is a good thing. I'm actually all for it. It's a survival instinct which, you know, men grow up with, to be able to make the best, understanding of the world and get through it in the best way. So when you actually say it'd be good to talk to someone, the suspicion is high, because who do they expect? Because often men expect that person who they're going to talk to is going to judge them, is going to belittle them, patronise them, put them down. Think of them as inferior. What we really recommend in being able to actually to encourage men to access services is that you've got to make a personal connection. You've got to actually say, it's good to ring Bill at this service and this number, because he really has worked a lot with, you know, men in very similar situation to yours and knows a lot about this. It's the personal recommendation which actually builds a lot more safety with men. It makes it familiar. It makes it normal. When you actually got to go into ringing a bureaucracy, ringing, you know, someone you don't know or you don't have any preparation for, that's where a lot of men will balk. And so it actually shifts probably their likelihood that they're going to call from probably 20% to around 75 to 80% when you make a more personal connection. So
do you offer that service? Do you say, look, here's a name of one of our counsellors to get your friend, partner, whatever, to talk to, so that personal trust can be developed? So here's the number of a guy, and you know, it's a, and you know we've used him before, and he's, you know, he's been great, he's helped my brother, and why don't you give him a call? Do you offer that sort of thing?
We try. As a national phone line, it's probably the hardest connection is that our database cannot be so specific with with a whole range of counsellors who work 24/7 on different shift patterns, that they know the specific individual. So for us, at the Men's Line Australia, it's probably the hardest context to really to live
to
what we speak, just because of that practicality. As for what we know, good practice happens at the local level. Personal recommendation is the way to go. When someone probably rings in and they find that their partner is highly resistant, what the counsellor has encouraged is even that person who's ringing in on the person's behalf to try to make that local connection, based upon the information given, and then to actually give it to the guy to actually say, hey, this person at such and such agency. That the more which it can be personalised, the more effective, because it's safer and it's more normal.
You're listening to Dad's on the Air, and we're speaking with Andrew King of Men's Line Australia. We'll go to a short break, and we'll be back.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. Except that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming. You'll sink like a storm for the time they are achieving. Come mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters beyond your command. Your own road is rapidly aging, so get out your new mind. Time they are
We're back speaking with Andrew King of Men's Line Australia. There's so much data now available that says that the abuse, for instance, occurs in about equal gender-wise. There's as much abuse by the female gender as the male gender, and various levels, types of abuse as well. But the emphasis has been mainly on the man being the perpetrator and the woman being the victim. Do you think that's a reason why many men are wary of ringing a service like that, because they feel that they're going to be viewed automatically as the perpetrator?
I'm not too sure from the women's point of view. I suppose we're in a context where there is a whole range of services. If women directly want to be able to get access or support themselves, they are quite likely to ring. Like, I think probably for Men's Line Australia, having 10% of women call is a good thing. Because
I mean men. Do you think that's the reason? Because they're generally now seen as automatically being seen as the perpetrator.
If they may have called a domestic violence helpline as a man, they may be hesitant to call that, yes, because a lot of the stuff...
Because they will be perceived.
What did you do to provoke her? That may be their fear. It may not be what they say, but, you know, because there's this assumption that in domestic violence it's the man who's the violent one. So do you think that would be behind the hesitance of some men to call? Because, you must be the perpetrator, and they may not get a sympathetic response.
Well, I think that experience does happen, continually. So it is one which they would be familiar with, even when they first actually approach a police station. Often that is the response which they're going to receive. I suppose the strength of Men's Line Australia is really... is that it's a very normal, friendly, male-friendly a way of an access point. And I suppose that what makes us very unique. Probably for, the range of certainly some of those contexts, it's probably important to what is it that's the type of abuse which actually is experienced, because probably the 50% shared experience is on a very wide range of abuse situations. Sure. Certainly that, when using those statistics, you have to be really aware of comparing, abuse in this situation to this situation. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, men are more likely to access something which is safe and normal. And so it is probably a really good way. Historically, Men's Line Australia can deal both, with men who have experienced violence as well as men who want to change their behaviour because of the violence they use.
If it's a complicated situation where it's actually both things are happening? A lot of the research internationally shows that a lot of violence in couples is mutual, and so you're the perpetrator and the victim, as is your partner. And then, is the difficulty, I suspect, for you then is, you want that man to be responsible for his own violence, but at the same time you don't want to label him just the perpetrator, because he's also, in the same sense, being victimised. If there might be, and often it's the case that there might be drugs or alcohol involved, and the partners just go at each other, and that's, it's a dysfunctional relationship in a sense. How do you tease out those nuances how do you train your counsellors to deal with all of those nuances?
Well, I think at the end of the day, they're not really going to be dealing specifically, because in a sense, in that situation you outlined, it really needs to be the couple needs to sit down with someone face to face. And that's the connection.
Right.
And you would recommend
which Men's Line Australia needs to make, and we would act upon in making that connection. And certainly there are a wide range of services in, New South Wales and many other states. That specialise in that sort of stuff. So probably at the end of the day, the message which I often give to men is, if you were to be a statesman, how would a statesman that really builds the best safety and deals with this in the most appropriate way respond, so that they're using their best resources to do what they need to do? You can't change someone else, and it's going to take two people in relationship counselling to have a look at what is it that's occurring, what do they want to collectively do about it, and make those decisions together.
But if he's taking that high ground and really being on his
head. I think it's the noble approach, which again is where, often that if you expect men to be bastards, they're often bastards. If you expect them to be statesmen, then they actually, for a lot of men, they are going to rise to the challenge, especially because it is, it's that to be able to act with integrity and, with respect, because the relationships which are most key, and I think that, the ones which we forget about so much is really the relationships which, how this all impacts on our children. Because it's often if children sit in those relationships, they often soak this up as a sponge, and it's building a whole new generation that are going to act it out by the time they reach their own adolescence and go into early adulthood and their own children are born. So that often that key challenge in men's lives is, how can you act with a difference here, and what is it you need to do that's going to keep the people around you who are important to you safe and, provides the best response to them. And that's where Men's Line Australia then can support that man as he's actually, accessing the counselling on the ground for him and his partner as well. So those two then happen in tandem. But we definitely wouldn't ever do couple counselling over the phone.
And you could refer
further. But the main thing is you can assure our listeners that if they ring men's line, they won't be automatically viewed as the perpetrator of the or the cause of the whole problem.
I can assure you that it's a I think that it is often the importance of letting the story be the story and hearing, you know, of what is it that's, that men, you know, actually need to say about what's in the important issues they face in their life is what ultimately is going to make the best difference as well. You know, the more which we can actually just be upfront, honest, no bullshit about these sort of issues, again, men are more likely to flourish because historically, that is the way which men have survived the workplace. They survived growing up in school environments. They survived in in the young adult years, and they also survive, you know, as grandparents. Sure. So it is that using that same approach, and Men's Line Australia traditionally is well known for being a very strengths-based approach to working with men. For some people don't like that, who may, you know, be from other contexts in Australia, they think we're too soft on men. I do not think it's actually that way, because one of the things which actually, in when you are strengths-based, is you often are straight-talking. You don't beat around the bush. It's called a spade a spade.
And men like that.
And you believe that that man can actually respond to it in the best and noble way which they can. And I think that is where men, again, you know, then they don't have to worry about any hidden agendas, hidden daggers, what's going to be stuck in their back. And that's where men relax. And they're more likely to tell you what's important, what needs to be done. And they're more likely to act upon. That's probably the universally in working with a whole lot of men. Organisations that work with men out of across Australia is that the, you know, the one thing which most people actually say who work with men is they love energy of when men decide to do something, they actually just do it. And I think that's a wonderful, you know, I think it's that practical action approach to life, which
real
is
strength.
Which is, again, it's a strength which we use.
But even though we're so strong as men, the White Ribbon campaign to stop violence against women and children is soon to commence. It's a multi-million dollar government-funded project, and it does portray only the males as the perpetrator because the violence is only seen as violence against women and children. What are your views on this campaign? Because that affects how men are seen in the general community and how they will ultimately feel. You know, they feel somehow being stigmatised. You know?
Even though the aims are obviously noble, and I think most men would agree we need to reduce violence against women and children, but do
when
they feel
betrayed.
Like it's... Well, you're sort of in labelling some men as violent. Is that brush then spreading across all men? That's a common theme that we hear on listeners to our program.
We hear that in this conference with the Indigenous people, how
the intervention program, well, sort of
the men are very fearful that they're now being stigmatised as child rapists and violent, all of them, you see. How do you see the white ribbon?
On the other hand, they understand that, you know, the intervention in a sense is necessary to protect those children that needed it. So it's sort of, you know, from noble aims, sometimes it leads to these sort of cultural stereotypes that can affect, you know.
So how do you see the White Ribbon campaign? What's your views on that?
Speaking personally, I think, more because I don't know if your organisation has a position on it.
Exactly.
Well, personally, I think it's there are so many things in our society which, like even good old Saint Nicholas, centuries ago, that, you know, that by taking gifts around to kids and to people who were really struggling at a time of cold winter in Europe, that it became part of a mythology which became Christmas. And in a sense, you know, that was that is something which we live with, and it's got today good things as a tradition, and it's probably got a commercialisation which we wish does not actually have it. Personally, when you think of White Ribbon, I think that yes, it emerged from Montreal in Canada, mm-hmm. where nine women were massacred, you know, basically in a
at a university.
Mm-hmm. And it was a march of 60,000 men that following week, you know, the following couple of months later, and they actually used the actual 25th of November is the date which they chose because it actually correlated with another experience in South America where six nuns were actually slaughtered as well. There was a group of 60,000 men who actually took to the streets.
Majority men,
90% men, okay. And actually took a march that the violence, you know, violence against women, violence is not acceptable, full stop.
Yeah.
And I think that, as its historical roots, is a tremendous strength, and it's the typical thing which men are well known for. Mm-hmm. I suppose the challenge of living with that is that it needs to still remain with the strength of where it came from, is that grassroots cause which men rallied to protect the broader context of the important relationships in their life and the broader community.
In a sense, the Indigenous men have done the same thing with the Integuas statement in Central Australia last year.
Yeah.
400 Indigenous men making a similar, standing up and saying, this is wrong on
that
behalf
we are the protectors, we are the supporters, and we are the providers. May have changed in what those words mean, mm-hmm. but they are still key words in men's lives. Mm-hmm. And it means that we can actually call a spade and act on what is it that's most important. So I suppose that, you know, White Ribbon today in 2009 has a tradition of that, but it also, it sometimes can also have where men are beaten over the head with a stick. And I suppose both those traditions.
We've got the sort of swear jar this year, which I think couldn't really be seen as a strength-based approach, and maybe they may have strayed away from that.
How to take a pledge.
I mean, even though that's noble, it's sort of, it seems to be reinforcing the negative side rather than harnessing that fantastic male energy to sort of stand up and sort of, you know, it's...
I sort of feel that violence is violence, and it, as the statistics show, it is also committed by women against children and against men. If it's all violence, why should I sort of wonder, why should we spend tens of millions of dollars on promoting one side of it while the other side of it is completely ignored, you know? And that does not help men at all, and I doubt whether it lessens the risk for women, and it makes your job harder because you're facing men that may have ultimately rang you, but what about all the ones that don't ring you because they're frightened that they're going to be looked at that way?
Probably one of the, and again, there's no easy, like I think violence in any context is one of the big and terrible issues which we work with in across all of societies.
Yep. Mm.
So there's no one easy answer, but I suppose that if there was one beneficial thing that has come out of the more recent years is that at least in relationships, we are more aware of what constitutes violence. And I suppose that's where even, a wider discussion about the different types of violence used is more of an everyday issue. And I think that if we went back 10, 15 years, that was not the case. And violence against women was nearly taken as a fact and was never even commented on or even spoken of. And that has been a major change which needs to be held on to. Because in effect, you know, we would not want to revert to where we were, you know, 15 years ago, where violence, you know, against women was just, you know, accepted as normal in relationships because it was sort of that privacy of the, you know, what happened behind that family door, home door, you know, was never commented on or never spoken to directly. So the change now means that it is much more in public knowledge. How to provide that best response, like I think that you know, the fact of it is when men do use violence, we are bigger, you know, our body mass is often much stronger, and it actually has far greater consequence. And that is probably why the resources are skewed the way which, you know, they currently are. and we try to find our best solutions with that. But certainly I think that, yes, that no violence is acceptable in societies, and that's that is an important message which we need to continually hold on to.
Do you think that we've started with violence against women and eventually governments would will catch up, because we're starting with maybe that group that's... Because, you know, on average, they're not, you know, they're physically not as strong as their partners. So we're starting with that, and that we'll catch the issue of violence against men, by other men as well as by women, might, you know, follow on. Would that be your hope, that we're sort of starting with that and move, and so that we can actually eventually address all violence? Because that's, as you say, it's sort of, if a man learns to be violent in the pub with his mates, and suddenly he's at home, and then he's got one message: at home you must behave this way, but the message he's got when he goes to the pub is that it's all on, and we're not. So, you know, these different arenas link into each other, and so if we don't address all those contexts, is it a futile attempt to address just one? You know?
Well, I think we can only really deal with where we're currently at to. What's going to happen in the future is going to be another issue. I suppose that it's a sad prediction to imagine that, you know, that certain sorts of violences may be actually on the increase, and even, you know, but, and, you know, that is, those are issues probably for the future. You know, at the moment we need to best address what is it that's still the common experiences of violence and the implications and the effect which that violence have on families. And that is where most energies are actually placed. So, but certainly, as it's, you know, in another 10 years, it may be in a different context, and it'll be good to review where those services are up to. In the Men and Family Relationships Forum, which is happening in Newcastle in October, there is a discussion amongst organisations across Australia how to make the reduction of violence an everyday issue, that it becomes more ordinary, that we can actually talk about this and address it in very practical ways. You know, that I think, you know, that's one... it's a different context, but Men's Line Australia has just launched a booklet in conjunction with Relationships Australia Victoria called Renovate Your Relationship, which looks at, it's a user-friendly little manual for men that takes the metaphor of renovating your, you know, a building or a house, DIY, and really look at how do you actually apply that to relationship issues. So where's your relationship up to? How do you understand the site and context and strength of your relationship? What are you wanting to do? What's the toolbox? And it looks at a whole variety of toolbox. When do you need to call in a professional? You know, and all of these issues, which are often day-to-day considerations for men who are involved in building and renovation, they're the same sort of problem-solving techniques which are used in trying to look at relationship issues. So I suppose that as time goes on, it's about continuing to make these sort of ideas of there is a section in that booklet when the roof blows off, and, you know, that in violence and anger issues actually impact on relationships. So we are continuing to keep talking about those issues and how men deal with it and what they can do, which makes a difference. So that booklet, if any of your listeners are interested, if they ring Men's Line Australia on 1300 789978, they can get that booklet sent to them free of charge.
Fantastic. Is that also the number for your general counselling line?
Yeah, that's the Men's Line Australia phone line, 1300 789978.
And do you have a website as well that you want to give out to our listeners? So if they're, you know, if they're feeling still a little bit nervous about face-to-face calls, they can jump online and get the resources?
Yeah, Men's Line Australia's website is mensline.aus.org.au.
Finally, Andrew, we'd like to thank you very much for joining us on the program. Is there any final words you'd like to say to our listeners regarding Men's Line to encourage them perhaps to make use of your facilities?
Well, I think it's just to remember that the relationships in our lives are those important cornerstones, not to take them for granted, mm-hmm. and to really appreciate your own strength in what is it that you bring to those relationships, mm-hmm. and make the most of that. And also some of the special ways to enjoy that is to be able to talk about it when you need to. You know, what is it that is important to you in those relationships? And if something needs to change, you know, look at, change is always possible.
Sure.
Mm. Great. Well, that's a great message on which to end the interview today. We've been speaking with Andrew King and from Men's Line Australia, and it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the program, and hopefully we can get you back sometime a couple of months down the track, or when you've got a new service or a new booklet, and let our listeners know about it.
Great. Thanks, Greg. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Dad's on the Air. We'll go to a short break and we'll be back.
Don't you love her madly? Don't you need her badly? Don't you love her ways? Tell me what you say. Don't you love her madly? Wanna be her daddy? Don't you love her face? Don't you love her as she's walking out the door? Like she did 1,000 times before. Don't you love her ways? Tell me what you say.
Meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And we're back with Dads on the Air in the studio, Bill Cable from Mediate Now with Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com. I mentioned earlier that we were planning an interview with Ned Holstein, who's the founder and chair of the board of Fathers and Family in the US. Unfortunately, Ned seems to be caught in the traffic between his office and his home in Boston, so we might have to arrange that for another week. But Fathers and Family is Fathers and Families is a family court reform organisation in the US with a comprehensive strategy, an impressive history of legislative and fundraising success, and the largest reach of any advocacy group of its kind. Its campaign at the moment is to include parental alienation in what is known as the DSM-5. This is the fifth edition of an exhaustive Bible for psychiatrists, psychologists and others, in which the various disorders are catalogued. And it's been an uphill battle to get parental alienation included in this Bible for the psychiatrists. And of course, if it was included in the US Bible, it would also be relevant in Australia. Because what we've found in Australia is that, generally speaking, the psychologists haven't heard of it, and the few that have heard of parental alienation don't believe it exists.
Well, they're in denial, really. You know, I mean, we interviewed Dr. Ludwig Lowenstein, who wrote the definitive work, Parental Alienation Syndrome, oh, I think the year before last. And, they're really slow on the uptake here to actually acknowledge that parental alienation syndrome is real. It does exist, and it is a form of child abuse.
Yes, and I would refer anyone that has suffered from this or is interested in the topic to a book called Divorce Poison by Dr. Richard Warshak, and he's a leading US authority on parental alienation. Perhaps you might identify with some of the symptoms that are listed for parental alienation. Do you find there's a campaign of hatred with no gratitude for the target parent's contributions? There's no guilt for treating the parent with malice and disregarding the parent's feelings. Trivial explanations are offered for the hatred or false allegations of abuse. Polarized views of the parents, instead of the ambivalence that characterizes normal human relationships, children describe the alienated parent only in negative terms, can think of nothing good to say about that parent, and may have few, if any, positive memories of the parent. And this might be something that happened last week. They suddenly can't remember, because that's from the alienated parent. By contrast, the children regard the other parent as perfect. And in any conflict between the favoured parent and the target parent, the children automatically take the side of the favoured parent, sometimes without hearing the target's response, and sometimes in the face of obvious contradictory evidence. You find that children will often parrot the adult language, so the children's expressions echo those of the alienating parent and are often clearly beyond the children's normal vocabulary and understanding. That's when you get suspicious. There might be a declaration of independence where the children profess that their rejection of the target parent is their own decision and the other parent has exercised no influence or contribution to the alienation. And there might also be hatred by association where the child denigrates and rejects relative friends, even pets associated with the target parent, despite a previous history of gratifying relations.
And that obviously is not in the best interests of children. I mean, anyone can see that, I mean, they are half of both parents. It takes two people to make a child, and to make the child believe that one half of their genetic heritage is evil and bad and worthless is obviously going to have a profoundly negative psychological impact on them and the way they feel about themselves.
Yes, look, it's the children suffer the most, and that's tragic, but it really affects everybody. You know, as I was just saying, it's bad for the extended family. It's even bad for the alienating parent in Australia, which is usually the mother, because it's not as though by alienating the other parent it makes her feel happier. She just gets miserable as well.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone loses.
Everyone loses, and something. And what do you do about it? It's an extremely difficult thing to deal with, but Dr. Richard Warshak has recommended that rather than taking a passive role, you have to take an active role, and you have to learn, you must learn what to do when your children refuse to see you and when they're rude and hateful. You have to minimize the danger from the damage from bad mouthing, and you have to start identifying and correcting your own contribution to these conflicts. But there are active steps you can take. If you sit back and just hope that law will pass and they'll come to their senses, you're going to lose out in the long run. So we look forward to talking to Dr. Ned Holstein about these topics. That'll be in the next few weeks, and we'll see what's happening in the US and what progress they're making about including parental alienation as a recognised mental condition in the DSM.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I have here a media release from Men's Health Australia, and they have a website, menshealthaustralia.net. I will quote, Minister misleads Parliament on domestic violence. A leading men's health organisation today claimed that the Minister for the Status of Women, the Honourable Gail Gargo, MLC, misled Parliament by maintaining that false statistics on the government's Don't Cross the Line anti-violence campaign website are accurate. She said they were accurate, okay? The press release goes on to say, Men's Health Australia also lodged an official complaint with the Ombudsman last Thursday after 5 months of attempting to draw the Minister's attention to the major statistical errors on the website. The complaint alleges that the Office for Women acted unreasonably by publishing and not correcting this false and misleading information. Men's Health Australia spokesman and our own researcher, I might add, Greg Andreessen, said the facts and stats page of the website is extremely misleading to the public. It clearly inflates statistics about domestic violence against women while understating statistics about violence against men. Men's Health Australia is supportive of all efforts to reduce interpersonal violence in the community, but is concerned that the regular use of incorrect and misleading statistics by governments unfairly stigmatizes men and boys as violent and abusive while simultaneously denying services to male victims of violence. They are also concerned that the government's approach is not in the interests of all children in families where there is abuse or violence, but selectively favours those children in families where violence is perpetrated by the father. The other one-third to half of children have to fend for themselves without support. Now, some of the campaign's errors alleged by Men's Health Australia include overstating the annual number of women victims of violence by almost 400%, overstating the number of women killed in domestic violence situations by 86%, while ignoring the one in three victims of domestic homicide who are male. It also incorrectly claims that 95% of domestic violence involves a male perpetrator and a female victim, when in actual fact at least one in three victims of family violence are male. Ignoring the fact that as many young people have witnessed physical domestic violence by their mother against their father as have witnessed it by their father against their mother, it also ignores the research showing that equal numbers of young males and females have experienced domestic violence or have been forced to have sex by their boyfriend stroke girlfriend. They also claim that it incorrectly claims that domestic violence is the main cause of death, disability and illness in young women. In actual fact, the main causes are actually anxiety and depression, migraine, type 2 diabetes, asthma and schizophrenia. And I quote here, all victims of violence deserve campaigns based upon up-to-date, accurate data, and the taxpaying public doesn't deserve to be misled. Flawed data such as this can only lead to flawed policies and actions, and many children continue to be exposed to violence because of these myths, according to Mr. Greg Andreessen. He also goes on to state that inflating statistics on domestic violence against women risks generating an unwarranted climate of fear in the community, especially amongst females. It also has terrible impacts upon the self-esteem of boys and the development of their healthy masculinity. Understanding the prevalence of domestic violence against men makes it less likely that a man will be believed when he finally summons up the courage to disclose his partner's abuse of him. It also allows government to continue to get away with family violence policies and campaigns that ignore male victims. So that was a press release from Men's Health Australia. And once again, they have a website, Men's Health Australia, oneword.net.
And I would refer everyone that wants to know the real statistics in this area to the website One in Three. You can either use the words or the numbers, but just type that into your search engine and you will come up with the website with all the accurate figures in this area of domestic violence.
wrong. No children's laughter, just echoes in the gloom. No happy family, no faithful wife. I looked in the mirror and I said, this is your life. Now I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. I've been cut, but I ain't bleeding. I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. My children have been taken away. I'm alone with my worst fears. The view in the mirror, it's not a pretty sight. I did my best. Maybe I wasn't always right. Now I'm alone. My family is gone. My world has caved in, and I'm all alone. Now I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. I've been cut, but I ain't bleeding. I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. My children have been taken away. I'm alone with my worst fears. My worst. Now I'm shaving
they grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. There's just an interesting story in today's Telegraph. Sometimes we hear a lot about the men's violence and not too much about the women who are increasingly becoming violent in our society. A story in today's Telegraph describes an incident at the tiny Ilford public school, which is midway between Lithgow and Mudgee, where a young mother has now been forced to leave her child at the gate after being banned from entering in the grounds of the school for 6 months. Apparently there was an argument with the principal, Alexandra Coffey, in a decision that has split the community. The mother was accused of verbally and physically assaulting Miss Coffey. The mother, meanwhile, agrees that she had a verbal disagreement over an alleged comment at a parent and citizens meeting, but denies touching the principal in the confrontation at the school late last year. Nevertheless, that is the that's what's happened. The mother is seeking reinstatement of access.
She's been banned from the school.
But she's been banned for being violent towards the principal. The principal is saying that the mother had displayed aggressive behaviour verbally and physically assaulting me. So,
well, there you go.
One on the other side.
Yeah. Well, look, I've got one here. I mean, this is an absolute horror. This is in the Telegraph. Girl taken and killed by monster. Page 2 is the heading. Michael Madigan and Anna Caldwell have written, "It was just like any other night. A couple put their 8-year-old daughter to bed, wished her good night, and went to sleep themselves. But unlike any other day, especially in the sleepy Queensland sugar industry town of Bundaberg, they woke to find her missing about 5:45 a.m. yesterday, abducted from her bed. Just hours later, their daughter's battered, pyjama-clad body was discovered nearby in a roadside drain, and last night a massive police hunt was underway for her murderer." Now, this is the ultimate horror. As a parent, I mean, Dads on the Air, we send our condolences to the parents and family of this girl and this tragedy. This is one of the worst things as a parent. This is your worst nightmare. Taken from her own bed in her own home, where you would have thought would have been a safe place for her. She's, you know, an intact family, and some creature, has come and taken her and murdered this 8-year-old girl. I mean, it boggles the mind, the type of people out there, how anybody could perpetrate such a disgusting, disgraceful act is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yes, we don't know anything about this story at this stage, but I did hear that they're sending reinforcement police from New South Wales up to Queensland, so...
Well, let's hope they catch this whatever it is. It's probably most likely a male, you would think, in these situations, this monster. Well, you know, whoever it is, let's hope that they remove this person from society. They find them, they convict them, they lock them up, and they throw away the key, because that is just an absolute heinous, disgusting crime. I can't think of anything more disgusting. That's just disgraceful.
Yeah, we just have to be grateful that it is so rare in our community that sort of thing happens.
Well, exactly.
Meanwhile, I've got a story here which relates back to an issue we've been discussing in recent weeks about the various reports that have been put to the federal government about amendments to family law. And Kathleen Swinborne, who is the president of the Sole Parents Union, has written an article for Crikey magazine talking about these changes. She acknowledges that family law is one of the most contentious and emotional issues that government has to deal with. She thinks that everybody feels like a loser in the family court, whether it's about property, custody or child support, and nobody comes out a winner. I suppose where we might disagree is where Kathleen thinks the law should head, and where I think sensible people would consider that the law should head. Kathleen Swinburne refers to the 2006 changes, and in those changes, the family law was amended so that shared custody
had well, shared parental responsibility.
Shared parental responsibility was granted, but shared custody had to be considered by the court. And except where there are cases where there is violence or abuse and where the well-being of the children is severely compromised, the general thrust should be that the time should be shared. Although, you know, some people have pushed this further and said that there's a presumption of shared care. That is not correct. It is just something that needs to be considered by the judge. And one would like to think that judges have always considered this as one of the options. But the Kathleen Swinburne objects to these changes and saying that previously that there's some sort of 80-20 rule where the mothers would normally have custody of the children, fathers have access every second weekend and maybe half the school holidays.
Which is patently inadequate and is another form of child abuse.
Yes, and to go from to that to equal shared time, she argues that that's not right, so the 80-20 wasn't right, so what did that leave? 100% for the mothers.
Yeah,
I think that's where she's heading.
Yes, no, I think her opinions are completely out of step with all of the studies, with all of the statistics that basically show that children, even if children of separated families, do better when they have contact with both of their parents, and when the parents can just get over it, bury the hatchet, put the kids first, and work out some kind of sensible arrangement which is convenient to all parties, so that the children can see both parents whenever and as often as they want to, you know, and without any parental alienation. People have just got to grow up. I mean, and all of this foolishness treating children as a chess piece in the war of the sexes, it's just, it's not on. It's not on, and it's having a terrible impact on our children and on our society.
Yes,
and the Rudd government, of course, appear to be in the process of rolling back the poultry reforms that the Howard government brought in, bringing in the acknowledgement of shared parenting responsibility, which didn't quite go far enough in the opinion of this program, but at least it was a step in the right direction. And any attempts to wind it back are going completely and utterly in the wrong direction. All of the studies show that children need both parents in their lives unless there is a concrete, serious reason, such as violence, such as drug abuse, where a child is better off not being subjected to the behaviour and attitudes of one parent. In those cases, all right, the parent who is more responsible should get custody. But in normal situations where parents are upstanding, decent citizens, they should have an equal opportunity to be able to see their children and to be parents. And
yes,
that's fair.
It's extraordinary. Men, as far as I'm aware, have never argued for more than equal shared time, whereas the argument from the other side seems to be that 80-20 is not enough.
Yeah, they want more.
They want more than 80-20. There's no... even 50-50 is way too much for the men, according to people like Kathleen Swinburne from the Sole Parents Union.
Well, she's an anachronism. She is a feminist. They're a dying breed, hopefully. Their philosophy has been proven to be ridiculous. It's based on nonsense, historical fiction. Men have not abused women and throughout history. There's no historical basis for that presumption. And they should just, you know, it's time they played the game fairly, put the children first. Now, look, I have one here. This is an article in the Telegraph under the heading Skirts Unlawful. British schools which force girls to wear skirts may be breaking the law because the policy apparently discriminates against transsexuals. The UK Equality and Human Rights Commission said the dress code may breach the rights of girls who feel compelled to live as boys, and schools could face court action. The watchdog said requiring pupils to wear gender-specific clothes is potentially unlawful. It said research had found that pupils born female with gender dysphoria experience great discomfort being forced to wear stereotyped girls' clothes, for example, a skirt. Now, what do you think, Peter? Is this insanity? Have we gone... This is loony world.
We need to end on a lighter note, but this is absolute madness.
Yeah, I mean, transsexuals. Well, what percentage of the population are transsexuals? I mean, hey, let's make all the laws for, you know, like 0.0001% who happen to be transsexual. I mean, transsexuals, well...
What's the next thing? They're going to ban men from wearing pants, I guess.
Yeah, we all have to wear burkas or something, so you can't tell who's what sex and, you know... We actually had a suggestion a while ago that they should introduce a male burqa. That if women can completely cover themselves up, then why can't men? You know, why can't we walk around supermarkets completely covered up so nobody can tell who we are, what we are? And, you know, we thought we would name it the Jerker Burger because who knows what goes on under those garments.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing that anytime soon.
Yes, well, it wasn't actually a serious suggestion, Bill. But, no, exactly. Now, and there is a... There is, just on a final note here, just flicking through the paper, more women getting hooked on gambling. More women are becoming addicted to gambling, experts said yesterday. New figures show a third of problem gamblers are women at a time when Australia leads the world in poker machine numbers. University of Queensland School of Tourism researcher Dr. Timothy Lee said, as Australians put $6 million a day through poker machines, gaming was more and more feminized. So they're targeting women, and women are falling for it, and they're, you know, I mean, gambling has got to be the most ridiculous, stupid way you can waste your money in the world. I mean, you put your money in, how much does it cost you to be told you're a loser, and what kind of entertainment do you get? You get this kitsch little machine that goes diddle 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 and flashes all these stupid little lights at you in bright colours and, oh, give me some more money, and they pay it. They give it money. I'm sorry, I don't understand how anybody could sit in a pub or anywhere in a club and put their hard-earned money or their husband's hard-earned money or the resources that they need for their family in a lot of cases into these stupid little machines for what? For little, 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 you are a loser.
I think we can take from that Ian doesn't put a lot of his money in poker machines, but...
Not 1 cent.
The worrying situation is where the pension goes in or the child support payments go into the poker machines. That's when we've really got something to worry about.
Well, that's absolutely right, but... Anyway, well, I think we've just about pulled it off, Bill. I think that's just about Dad's in the Air for another week. So we'll just kick in the theme song here. You can hear this program. We'll be up on our website, which is dadsontheair.net. Rock and Pop Peter Vandervoort, hopefully, is on the job. And the program will be put up sometime either late today or tomorrow, and you can listen to it all again. I had fun. Hope you did as well, Bill, and we'll be back next week.
We'll be back next week with some more interesting interviews. And in the meantime, don't forget we're followed up by Country Bob on Country On. So look forward to seeing you all next week.
We're dead on the air. We're dead on the air.